This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Interracial couples are often warned about the consequences their children will face. Common wisdom has it they will grow up between two polarized racial worlds and feel at home in neither. Lisa Funderburg is the child of a black father and white mother. She wanted to talk with other adult children of interracial parents about race and identity. The result is her new book, Black, White, Other. We invited her along with two of the people interviewed in the book. Debo Adegbile is a 25-year-old law student living in New York. Zenobia Kujichagulia is the executive director of an emergency services center for poor and homeless people. She's 43 and lives in Oakland. Lisa Funderburg is a journalist in her mid-30s, living in New York. I asked her if her new book developed out of conflicts she faced.
I suppose I felt sometimes a conflict between how the world saw me and how I saw myself, and that would be the most essential conflict that I've ever had about issues of racial identity.
What's the difference between how the world saw you and how you saw yourself?
In its most reductionist terms, the world sees me as a white person, and I see myself as a combination of my white family and my black family.
Does the world see you as a white person because you're light-skinned?
Yes, I'm very fair-skinned, and I have straight hair, and I have blue eyes. And that fits most people's criterion of whiteness.
Now tell us about your parents.
My father is from Georgia, and he is a fair-skinned black man. And my mother is from Chicago, and she is a white woman. And they met in Philadelphia and married, and my sisters and I were raised there. And that's their background.
Debo, tell us something about your parents.
Okay. My mom came to this country from Dublin in the 1950s, late 1950s or middle 50s. And my dad came over a couple of years later from Lagos, Nigeria. Both parents came to New York City, and my mom was looking for work, and my dad was looking to go to school here in the United States. And they ended up meeting in New York while my mom was working here and my dad was going to school at that time.
Now, since we can't see what you look like, would you describe, you know, like the shade of your skin and what your
Sure.
hair is like and how that affects how other people see you?
Sure. Well, my skin is pretty brown. Oftentimes in New York City anyway, people begin speaking to me in Spanish and unfortunately, Spanish was not one of my strongest subjects in school, so I can't often respond. But I have pretty straight black hair, which I attribute to my mother's genes. But I have many of my dad's facial features. I have a wide nose and full lips.
Now, how do you identify when people ask you your race, what are you likely to say?
Well, I always say the same thing, and I kind of take it from there. I say that I'm an Irish Nigerian, and over the years that's had a lot of shock value, as you might imagine. but I sort of throw that out from the outset, and then depending on where the conversation goes from there, I react accordingly.
Not a real big Irish Nigerian community.
No, I don't think there are a whole lot of us. My brother and I, and anybody else that is looking to start a club can give me a call.
Now, your parents divorced when you were 10.
Yes.
And your father went back to Nigeria, and you grew up from then on with your mother. So when your parents split up, did that affect how you saw yourself racially?
Actually, it didn't. And I attribute that in large part to my mother, because even though the divorce was difficult for all of us, as divorces tend to be, my mother never attempted to recraft our identities. And when I say our, I speak about my younger brother and myself, Remy. She was always very much, both my parents, while they were married, instilled the fact in both of us that we were both Irish and Nigerian, and that was a special positive thing, as opposed to something to be shy about or embarrassed about. And my mother never reconsidered her initial position.
Zenobia, tell us something about your parents.
Well, listening to the first two just reminds me of how alike and yet very different we all are. My parents sort of resemble what Lisa described in a sense, at least physically. My mother is white. She was a farm girl and came from a family where the father, my grandfather, was Swiss-German, and my grandmother was very British-Irish. My father is family was black and Native American, and some white. And the Native American was Cherokee. My father is very, very light-skinned. In fact, my father and all of his siblings grew up to all pass for white.
Would you describe the shade of your skin and what people assume you are when they meet you?
Well, it depends on where I am. That's one of the reasons I live in the Bay Area, that there seems, especially as I'm older now, to be less misunderstanding. But I'm very light-skinned. I have features that, depending on where you are often mistaken for being white. my hair is pretty fine, and it's curly, wavy, and I generally do my best to keep it from being straight. I'm often mistaken for being white, more so when I was younger than I am now, but depending on where I am, it still can happen.
And how do you identify yourself racially?
When I was younger, much younger, as a child, I always identified myself as sort of all of the things my mother told me I was, and I thought that was really wonderful. That got me into a lot of trouble because I didn't realize when I was quite young that it was wonderful, but it was supposed to be a secret, at least the part of color was. And as soon as I got out of my family of origins home, then I exclusively identified as black, which always created problems because I didn't fit most people's appearance of that. Now I pretty much identify as a black Cherokee woman whose mother is white. And that way I'm acknowledging it. I just don't feel it.
You don't feel white?
No.
Oh, and why? I mean, growing up with a mother who was white, why do you not feel that you're part white?
I think there are a lot of reasons, but I think it's, at this point, what I'm identifying is primarily cultural and social and experiential and political. I mean, clearly it's there biologically. It's just that who I am in terms of the life I lead and the daily struggles that I deal with, I don't live the life of a white person, and I really don't identify with it.
I'd like to ask each of you if both sides of your family were loving of you, or if there was any racism directed at you from either side.
I don't think that I experienced any racism from my family. It was actually interesting for me when I was a young boy, about six or so. My family took trips in two consecutive summers, first to Ireland, and then actually first to Nigeria and then to Ireland. And we were very well received by both sides of the family. And that was a very special time for me, having my extended family be so far away. I didn't get to see them very often, and it was quite a treat to get to see everybody. And both families accepted me and the husband or wife, depending, with open arms, and that was very special. And I think that is something that informed my opinions of race as well. And it did so by letting me know that race is something that Americans are peculiarly absorbed with. And I haven't felt the same type of forces from my Irish and Nigerian family. Though, of course, when you get Irish and Nigerian people coming to the United States, they may or may not become infected with Americans' preoccupation.
That's an interesting perception. Lisa, what about you?
Well, there are stories that I have found, and it's interesting because I didn't know these until I started working on the book. I think one of the things that was compelling for me was to find out more, not just about how other people related to having this background, but also to find out more about my own family, because we really didn't talk about the identity of me and my two older sisters when I was growing up. And so I was doing a lot of interviewing of my parents for some deep background for this, and my mother told me some stories about how there was certainly a period of adjustment that had to happen on her side of the family. Her parents had lived in pretty much completely white communities growing up and were concerned and had concerns for her when she told them that she was going to marry a black man. And apparently my grandfather, my mother's father, said in response, I want to crawl inside a hole. And he obviously had some difficulty with it, but also my mother told me that within the next 4 years, for as long as he continued to be alive, he came around to accept and even like my father, and that was because he got to know who my father was and realized that, for one thing, they both held they had the same work ethic, which was a very important thing to my grandfather and very important to my father. And that was something that certainly crossed all the boundaries of fear and territoriality and just any kind of bigotry that there might have been.
Zenobia, what about your story?
Well, I think it's interesting that the three of us had pretty good experiences with both sides of our family. I did, in a sense, because I know a lot of people didn't.
Right.
Except the ironic thing with me, I guess, is that, first of all, like Lisa, it wasn't discussed much. And what was discussed was just about completely with my mother and myself, and it was you're this wonderful bouquet of flowers kind of thing, but it was also don't tell anybody. My mother's side of the family, which as I said is very white, were very, very, very accepting of my brother and sister and I, and they were very good to us, and whatever they may have thought inside, which I suspect would have been mostly just unknown things, just they didn't know. They kept to themselves, and they did their best to make us feel good about ourselves. They really didn't know what they were dealing with, though, because where they lived, where they grew up, there were very, very few black people at all, and so it wasn't something they knew anything about. My mother didn't know my father was black until after she married him, and they certainly didn't know it either. My father's side of the family, on the other hand, simply never, ever, ever discussed it and did their best to pretend that it didn't exist. And it was only when I was quite small that my father's mother ever talked to me about the Cherokee stuff, being born on the reservation and life there. Later, she denied everything. Family pictures that existed when I was little disappeared as I got older. There were no pictures anywhere of family members. So I guess there were these incredible mixed messages, and they were very insidious in that they were covert.
So, Zenobia, I think it's interesting, when you were a young woman, I guess, you moved to the San Francisco area and were taken in by your father's side of the family, but the side of his family that was black and identified as black, as opposed
That's
to your
right.
father and his siblings who identified as white.
That's
so
right.
how did that change your sense of self to live with a part of your family that was black and was public about it?
It was validating. For the first time in my life, I did not feel isolated. I did not feel alienated. The best years of my childhood were on my mother's parents' farm, and they were wonderful. But I always felt like I had been beamed down from a spaceship, and I kept waiting for someone to come and get me. And I didn't know how to articulate it. I didn't know how to really process it mentally or emotionally. But when I found my relatives out here, it was like being whole. It sounds so cliche, I guess, but it was. It was like, this is who I am. This is real.
We're talking about race and identity with three people who each had one black and one white parent. Lisa Funderburg is the author of a new book about biracial Americans called Black, White, Other. Debo Adegbile and Zenobia Kujichagulia are both interviewed in the book. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. We're talking about race and identity with three biracial Americans. this is a kind of complicated question, but, you know, in American society, racially, the way it's worked is that, you know, white people have often been the oppressors of black people. And I wonder if that comes into play in your own personal identity, if there's any, if the white part feels more like the oppressor part or something politically that you don't really want to accept or deal with because of, you know, certain historical truths in America.
Well, I would say that I don't feel that there are these two little parts of me battling each other out inside, but I am more and more comfortable with not having to answer the question, what is your racial identity? And I think in some ways, working on the book and listening to all the 46 people who talked to me for it, mm-hmm. Talk about the individuality of their experience, I think that, and their individual definitions of what race meant, all of which were valid to them, but not necessarily valid for the next person who appeared on the next page. I feel less inclined to have to answer that question. However, to be honest, I would have to also add that if I were forced and to fill out a form that said black, white, or other, and I couldn't check other, and I couldn't check all of them, I would not check white. And that, for me, I think is an expression of a political preference of affiliation. If I'm going to have to choose, I would prefer to be affiliated and to show that I have no resistance or reluctance to be associated with blackness.
Lisa, there's somebody in your book who, in the interview, says that I think she'd moved to a black neighborhood from a mixed neighborhood or a mostly white neighborhood, mm-hmm. and when she got there, she realized that there was just like a lot of distrust of white people, and that white people were seen as the oppressors and seen as being bad, and it just made her very uncomfortable and made her think, well, is my mother, who's white, bad? Is the white part of me bad? What does that mean? And I guess I'm wondering if any of you ever went through something similar.
Well, yes. And that's where, again, we're all really different. It's absolutely true that my preference, for the reasons you've identified, would be if I could just say and be left alone that I'm black, I probably would have just stay that way, but the world wouldn't let it be. And I, based on my own experiences that I had in the South as a child, and then coming of age as I did as a militant in the 60s, I absolutely went through the whole thing of really wishing that I didn't have what Malcolm called the white racist rapist blood in me. I absolutely went through that, and I tried to convince myself to join the Nation of Islam and went to the mosque and listened to them talk about white devils, and I ultimately couldn't do it. But yes, that's been an issue for me personally, very much so.
Actually, Zenobia, you tell a story in the book about when you went to one of the Nation of Islam mosques, mm-hmm. and you had to take off the covering from your head so they could examine your hair and see if you were really black. They weren't really sure that you were black, and they tried to test you in various ways to examine you.
They did, right. I went with my cousin, and they looked at my hair and looked all around the circle of my cuticles and all these supposed little things and deemed me black enough to enter.
How did that make you feel?
Terrible. Terrible, because it's like no matter what, I felt as though I wasn't acceptable. I wasn't enough of anything. And I had always felt that way. Again, though, each of us come from different families, and in my family, the whole issue of denial played heavily into a lack of self-esteem and having to keep a secret about something on one hand that was supposed to be so wonderful and on the other hand so horrible that you weren't supposed to tell anybody.
Lisa, I want to wrap up with a couple of questions for you, since you interviewed so many people for the book and you got this wide perspective from doing the book. What does race mean to you now? I mean, you asked this question in the book. Is race a function of the color of your skin, or does it have to do with culture, with class, with neighborhood, with the texture of your hair? What is it?
I think the answer I found was that it's all of those things. It's all of those things and twice as many more. And that for me, it was important. It was very valuable that the stories of the people who are in the book concretize that it is all of these parts of you. It's not just the color of your skin. It's not just who your parents were, or what their attitudes were, or what time you grew up in. It's all of those things. And I think it is really valuable for all of us to look at all those things in conjunction with each other rather than trying to isolate out any particular piece of them. I also think that race is something that has no universal concrete meaning. I personally believe that a lot of the idea of race is a constructed idea that at its very basis is a false notion. However, I simultaneously believe that the impact and effects of racism are as concrete as anything could ever be. And I additionally believe that race for pretty much everybody in the book was a very important and personalized notion, whether it was in some portion determined or in large part determined by exterior pressures, what other people tested or challenged or provided as models of what each person's racial identity should be, or whether it was from an internal, more of an internal definition. I do think that it's a really important, valuable, valid on an individual level concept for some people, and that's to be respected, but not to be lumped together unless people want to lump it together.
We're regrettably out of time. I want to thank the three of you. It's really been fascinating. Thank you all for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Lisa Funderburg is the author of the new book, Black, White, Other. My other two guests, Debo Adegbile and Zenobia Kujichagulia, are both interviewed in the book. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.